Well, if you're looking for a list of events or things to do this summer, you have come to the right place. Larry Mueller here. You're listening to WPR News, and we're talking about summer activities and festivals going on all around Wisconsin with our guest, Ann Sayers. She is Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism. She started that role in 2021 after serving as Acting Secretary and Deputy Secretary as well. And as we talk with Ann, I hope you'll join in. What are your thoughts on maybe the economic impact of tourism? What's your favorite summer activity in Wisconsin? Maybe you want to plug a local event that you have. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Secretary Ann Sayers, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
I love being here. Thank you so much for having me, Larry.
Well, I tell you what, some pretty good news. The department recently released some good economic impact numbers. How did tourism do last year?
We did. It was such a fun opportunity to get to announce those numbers because they were record-breaking. We generated a historic $25 billion in economic impact in 2023. And what's even more amazing is that we had actually broken the record back in 22. So we did it again. That marks back-to-back years for record-breaking tourism economic impact. And that means some really good things for all of us as residents of Wisconsin.
Absolutely. What do you think, or let me say, put it this way, what do you credit for those record numbers?
Yeah, well, there's a couple different things. I mean, we saw that, and this is maybe the most important piece of information of all. We saw that growth happen in all 72 counties, which means it wasn't just like one certain event or something that made those numbers possible. It was really a lift across all parts of our state. And a number that I like to make sure everybody hears is the fact that in order to maintain the same level of government services that tourism's economic impact creates, each household in our state would have to pay an additional $660 a year. So that's that direct impact to us as citizens. And that number is up 6.9% over the year before. So we're all getting more out of our tourism because of it. And the reason why, as you asked, is a couple different things. One, we saw that tourism businesses, I think, are feeling a little more comfortable and confident in this post-pandemic economy at this point. We saw them buying things like hotels were buying more linens, or they were upgrading their equipment. Maybe they're buying a new refrigerator for their restaurant. They're sort of investing in themselves, which is something we're really, really happy to see. And that of course, adds up. We also saw a record number of overnight trips, and that is key because an overnight visitor spends about three times more than a day visitor. For comparison's sake, an overnight visitor will spend about $227 per visit. A day visitor spends $79 approximately. So that's great to see people making longer itineraries and partaking in more activities while they're here. And then finally, it truly is the marketing that we're very, very grateful that decision makers have made possible for the Department of Tourism to do all the advertising you're seeing out there for Travel Wisconsin, but also all of our local communities that are pouring their hearts into making sure their destinations and their businesses are getting in front of consumers and reaching them. So there's a lot of factors, and it added up to some really good news.
I miss a lot of calculating going on there. What numbers do you use in all this?
Well, one thing I like to point out is, because this is always sort of the first comment, like, well, what about inflation? Well, we have an answer to that. You know, tourism's economic impact in Wisconsin was up 5.4% last year. Inflation was up 3.4%. So we're outpacing inflation by more than 2%, which is evidence that it truly marks growth for this industry. So that's one to look at.
Well, last time you were here, we had some fun with the fact or fiction quiz, which I think I missed it. I missed one in the quiz. What's the background of this quiz first, and then let's play it.
Well, I was impressed. You did great last time.
I spent a lot of time in Wisconsin, believe me.
You know your stuff. Yeah, so we had a lot of fun and we thought we'd play again. It's called Fest or Fiction. The idea is that I'm going to quiz Larry here. I'm going to throw out the name of a festival. He's going to say whether he thinks it's real, whether it's a fest, or he thinks I'm lying and it's fiction. And then I'll give you a little more detail about that festival or one similar to it. So, oh, and you can play along at home too. This is a lot of fun. You can kill some real time on travelwisconsin.com/fest or fiction. I learn something every time I go and play. So I encourage you to do that. Are you ready, Larry?
Ready as I'll ever be.
Have you been studying?
No.
All right, let's see how you do. First one, Ductona 500. Fest or fiction?
Ductona 500?
That's right.
I'm trying to think. I know there are some ducks. Susie the duck in Lodi. I can't remember hearing about Ductona, so I'm going to say false.
Well, I'm sorry, Larry, but it's true. Oh. It is a fest.
Where is it?
The Ductona 500 takes place annually in Sheboygan Falls. Oh. And it is coming up Sunday, July 7th, so make your plans to be there. This is an amazing thing. So one of the highlights of the festival is an antique car and boat show. So you can spend hours checking out over 300 classic vehicles in River Park. But you're probably wondering, where are the ducks? What are we talking about ducks here? So that would be the famous duck race. They draw inspiration from the Daytona 500, where the Ductona 500 puts thousands of plastic toy ducks and races them down the Sheboygan River. Visitors can even win cash prizes based on how the ducks finish in this race. This is also Wisconsin. I love it. And then, of course, just don't worry, all the ducks are corralled and they are removed from the river after the race. And of course, all day long, there's special activities for the kids. There's food vendors, live music, all that and more at the Ductona 500.
What is this, 500 feet or 500 ducks? Or
I thought I had the same question. You would think 500 ducks, but there's thousands of ducks at the Ductona 500. So more math for us this morning.
All right. Well, I missed one. And remind me again, it's where?
Sheboygan Falls.
And when is it?
July 7th. It's a Sunday.
Okay. All right. Well, let's try another one.
Okay. This one is the Wisconsin Butter Sculpting Festival. Fest or fiction?
Oh, I'm going to say fact on that one. Oh, no.
You're so close. And we should just say, Larry, you are close because there are a lot of festivals that have butter sculpting.
Yes.
Yes. We just don't have a festival entirely dedicated to it. But also that could change any minute because we're Wisconsin and we're always making new festivals. But at the moment... But what we do have, if you're looking to see some sculpting going on, we have a couple different ideas. One is the Wisconsin Sand Sculpting Festival, where you can catch semi-professional sculptors crafting gorgeous creations out of sand. It's right on the shores of Lake Michigan. That is happening July 19th through the 21st. That's in Manitowoc. And you can actually even participate in hands-on amateur competitions. And there's live music, food trucks, cold drinks, and vendors. I went last year. I was honored to be a guest judge. And it was absolutely incredible. We had one of those weekends where it was like, is this the Caribbean or is it Lake Michigan? It's sunny and beautiful. Really worth checking out.
Well, that sounds pretty good. I was thinking there's a carving festival that is going on right now in the city of Monona to honor Harry Whitehorse, famous wood carver. And it's an international festival, and it's free. You can just watch people from literally all over the world carving things out of wood, and I think it's going on this rest of this week in Monona.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. That is a great one to check out. There's more information on our website at travelwithwisconsin.com. We were really honored to help support that festival with a check recently. There's another carving one going on. That's coming up August 2nd through 4th. That's in Eau Claire, and that's the U.S. Open Chainsaw Sculpture Championship. That's where carvers from near and far are going to be wielding chainsaws as they sculpt wood. Just wild stuff.
And the Harry Whitehorse one goes through June 22nd, Jill reminded me. So a few more days yet on that one. All right. So far, I am 0 for 2, but I'm wanting to put in an argument that I was almost right.
I mean, they're educated, respectable answers. Yes. I feel good about this next one.
All right, let's hear the next one.
Okay, the next one is the Cream City Cream Soda Festival.
Oh, there's.
Best or freaking.
I would think that Milwaukee would have something like that. I'm gonna say.
They didn't even let you
I think I'm
answer.
going to say yes to the last one because there's got to be at least one I'll get right. All right, tell me about it. There's no Cream City
Again,
Festival in Milwaukee?
I mean, again, this was kind of a trick question. You're so close. There isn't that exact festival, but there is a root beer bash in Glendale. So you can travel to the Bay Shore Mall on Saturday, August 3rd. This is a super family-friendly event. The root beer of honor is none other than our Wisconsin-famed Sprecher root beer. The day starts with a DJ spinning music for a kids' dance party, which sounds like a lot of fun. First 1,000 kids will get free root beer bash swag bags. And don't forget to get in line for a free Sprecher root beer float. For each float they give away, Sprecher actually donates a meal to Feed America, and the kids will enjoy face painting, balloon twisters, a petting zoo, and so much more at the root beer bash.
All right. Give me the last one.
Okay, for real though, I think this is the one that this is it. This is the one for you. Wisconsin Farm Technology Days.
Oh, that one I know for sure is true.
Ding, ding, ding. Congratulations.
And tell
You
me,
nailed it.
and I've been to Farm Technology Days, but it's been a while. What's going on this year?
Yeah, this is a beloved festival. You can see the latest and greatest in farm machinery and technology in Chippewa County this August. The Wisconsin Farm Technology Days, it's an annual event celebrating Wisconsin's proud farming industry. The festival actually rotates host communities each year, which I love.
Yeah.
And this year's event takes place in Cadott, and it's August 13th through the 15th. Thousands are going to be there with you. It's going to see the latest equipment like tractors and implements. You're going to see demonstrations and even get hands-on with some of the equipment. So that is one to definitely check out.
That is, well, at least I got one right out of all of them. You know, I should mention, we're doing the Larry Mueller Show is going on the road, and we will be at the Food and Farm Exploration Center in Plover, near Stevens Point on August 26th, and I'll be doing my show live from there.
Well, that's exciting. You know what they have there?
They have lots of foods and farms.
And the world's largest potato masher.
Oh.
You've got to get your picture taken with that.
Don't worry, I'll have my picture taken with that one. Oh my goodness. Well, we've got some more, and I'll mention some of the other ones that we've got coming up. And I know you've got a lot more as well for us today. Ann Sayer, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at things to do in Wisconsin in the summer with our guest Tourism Secretary Ann Sayers back with us. It's always great to have her come by. We've had some fun with the quizzes. We've talked about some different things that are going on around the state. You know, I was talking to my father-in-law, Herb Stouty, and he was telling me about how he and Ione were at a June Dairy Month event Had some good Wisconsin food on a farm. And of course, June is Dairy Month in Wisconsin. That means something for tourism, doesn't it?
Well, there's just so many events going on that give folks an opportunity to get out on the farm, see where their food comes from, actually experience the farm making experience. So we have lots of ideas for how you can get out there and celebrate June Dairy Month.
Yeah, we've got, well, what's going on in Dane County? Have you got anything on there?
Yeah, we can start at Sassy Cow Creamery. They're outside of Columbus. I just love it there. They host farm tours during the summer. You can learn firsthand how the cows produce milk that's either bottled fresh or made into award-winning ice cream. There at their store, once the tour wraps up, you can actually choose from 28 flavors of ice cream to satisfy your sweet tooth, or maybe you want to order a grilled cheese from the farmhouse kitchen. And find more dairy adventures in Dane County by visiting Fromagination. This is sort of like heaven on earth if you love cheese. This downtown Madison shop stocks artisan Wisconsin cheese of all kinds, but they also host public cheese classes. So you can kind of delve a little deeper, learn some things. You'll learn amazing stories about the farms, the animals, cheesemakers, and behind the scenes information about the dairy industry. You can even arrange private group classes at Fromagination. So that's a really fun thing to think about organizing for friends and family.
Well, let's move a little further north and east in Wisconsin. Go to Manitowoc. It has an interesting event involving calves. What's going on there?
Really interesting. So the Farm Wisconsin Discovery Center in Manitowoc, it's a state-of-the-art agricultural education center. You're going to be able to feed your curiosity. There's hands-on exhibits, teach you about where your food comes from, including dairy products. But this part's just bananas. At the Land O'Lakes Birthing Barn, expectant mother cows arrive at the center ready to give birth. And as a visitor, you have this unique opportunity to see it happen through a viewing window. And the staff members, they'll talk you through the care of the mother, the care of the calf. It's a really amazing experience you won't forget. And, you know, these are not the kinds of things that can be scheduled, but the center does a really nice job of trying almost every single day to have a calf delivered at the center. So you have a pretty good shot at seeing it. And I recommend afterward, The Wharf. This is downtown Manitowoc. It has great food, live music. It's right on the waterfront. It's like this massive open air patio. It has a retractable roof. And on those sunny summer days, you pull up and it's just like, okay, I'm on vacation now. Great place to check out.
I grew up on a farm, so I watched many a calf being born, and it's back to your first statement there, and it's an experience, something that kids should be able to see for sure. I even helped one.
Exactly. It's a really important part of who we are and where our food comes from. And
yeah,
it's really neat that they offer that opportunity for visitors.
You mentioned Fromagination a minute ago, too. You know, of course, our most beloved dairy product, I think, is cheese. And there are probably more opportunities, maybe. You mentioned Fromagination. Are there other opportunities to learn about the process?
Yes. So, you know, every community has a fantastic cheese shop. So I recommend checking those out locally and as you travel. But one idea is to make a trip to Greene County. So this, you know, 90% of Wisconsin milk is turned into cheese. And at the National Historic Cheesemaking Center Museum in Monroe, you're going to learn all about that. You can sort of immerse yourself in a time before automation. They have exhibits and artifacts that tell the story of cheesemaking from the late 1800s to the early 1900s. It even has a restored farmstead cheese factory from the 19th century that you can check out. Their daily tours, they're led by retired cheesemakers and docents. They're the best people ever. And you get to hear all these colorful stories of Greene County's rich cheese history. That is pretty special that we have that opportunity.
Absolutely. There's another area, I think I mentioned it in my introduction. We have an opportunity to learn more about our state through Native American tourism. What does that term cover, Anne?
Yeah, so Wisconsin has 11 federally recognized tribal nations, and that means that we have this very rich tapestry of visitor experiences. There's these cultural attractions, so much history to learn and enjoy, and outdoor recreation to check out. So there's just really a lot of opportunities to get out there and learn about the 11 different tribal nations in our state.
And I believe Red Cliff has a great opportunity coming up. Tell us about that.
They do. So you're right. The public is invited to enjoy the 46th annual Red Cliff Powwow for fun, food, and pageantry. The family-friendly event is happening July 5th through the 7th. You're going to be very impressed as artists compete in traditional dancing and singing contests that happens throughout the weekend. And there's a ceremony starting the evening of Friday, July 5th to crown the powwow royalty and follow that up by joining a walk run in the morning on Saturday. While you're in the Red Cliff area, I really recommend checking out Mijum. This is a restaurant you have to ferry over to Madeline Island, force me, right? Sounds amazing. And there, Chef Bryce Stevenson, who is a member of the Red Cliff Band, operates this fine dining restaurant, Mijum. He prepares Native American dishes with ingredients like venison, duck, squash, wild rice, all of it with a twist of French flair. And I mean, I have to mention, you may have seen Chef Bryce Stevenson recently because he was a participant in Bravo's Top Chef Wisconsin. He was on that episode with all of the indigenous chefs, so that's pretty neat to see that. And then another idea is the reserving a kayak tour. It's through Rustic Makwa Den. There is a guide service that's going to take you around the stunning cliffs and sea caves of the Apostle Islands, and it's an unforgettable excursion if you haven't done that yet.
You mentioned Top Chef in the show, and it is really a cool show. And I gotta believe it's done some good for Wisconsin.
Yes, you know, they call it the Top Chef effect, and we sort of thought something might happen and we expected that, but we're really hearing some amazing stories of things like the cheeses selling at 1 a minute while they were being portrayed on the show. We saw the episode that featured Frank Lloyd Wright. You know, immediately Taliesin had a boost in their gift shop sales and their number of tours. We're hearing about restaurants that we on our site, travelwisconsin.com, has a page you can go to, see all the places featured on Top Chef, see some of the favorites from the judges that they loved while they were here, and also some shout outs from us about other places you might want to check out while enjoying Wisconsin's culinary treasures. And we're hearing from all of those places that they're seeing a little boost too. And for some of them, a very big boost. So we think that's kind of going to just keep happening as the show continues to be aired in streaming and released in new markets worldwide for years to come.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. On the Native American tourism, just kind of back to that a bit, Lac du Flambeau has something going on this summer, right?
Yes. So a couple things coming up. You can check out Lac du Flambeau's Band of Lake Superior Chippewa by going to their famed lakes of the area. The tribe's name actually comes from a traditional practice of harvesting fish at night by torchlight, and local guides will actually help you find the best fishing spots in the area. So that's great. Another thing to look at is the George W. Brown Jr. Ojibwe Museum and Cultural Center. It's one of the most complete collections of Lac du Flambeau history. Exhibits highlight a 24-foot dugout canoe, several birch bark canoes, traditional Ojibwe arts and crafts, even a record sturgeon taken from one of the area's lakes. And there's a great gift shop too you'll want to check out. And then, of course, you can spend the night at Lake of the Torches. This is a resort and casino featuring more than 100 comfortable rooms, with many providing lakeside views. I was just there a couple weeks ago. It's so cozy and the view is spectacular.
And I hear there are some golfing opportunities as well. Not that I golf more than once or twice a week, but
Yeah, once or twice a week, Larry. You crack me up. Yes, so we have the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians. There is a gorgeous course there, the Pine Hills Golf Course. It's welcomed some golfers to their championship course over the years. It's tree-lined fairways. There's varying elevations, so that keeps things challenging, but it's also playable for golfers of all levels. You're going to be surrounded by just relaxation as you play your way through the par 72 course. And then you can take advantage of a stay and play package that they offer at the North Star Mohican Casino Resort. You can play around, get a room, a food and beverage coupon, and a gaming credit. It's really a very good deal.
I haven't tried it yet, but I plan to. Summer in Wisconsin, I wonder how many music festivals we have. There are a lot of them. Those music festivals, and I've attended my share, I guess, over the years, or maybe not quite my share. I should have probably attended more. But they can bring a lot to a community.
They really can. And there are so many, like you said, I don't know the answer to how many, but there are a lot. They're on travelwisconsin.com, and we didn't even know where to start in putting together a list for you. But we thought, of course, we've got to start with Summerfest, right?
Yeah.
It's the biggie, and it kicks off this weekend. It's 600 artists from all genres electrifying the Lake Michigan waterfront. Some of the biggest names in music from today and the past. I love checking out Stone Temple Pilots a couple years ago, which I know their moment was in the 90s, but I'm still into it. So that's fun that they bring those treasures back to us. But you can check out one of the newest experiences they're offering this year at Summerfest. It's a cosmic cornfield. I kind of can't even picture it, so I'm going to have to see it with everyone else. It's a glowing maze of light, sound, and sculpture that draws on childhood memories of getting lost in fields of corn. So that's going to be pretty cool. It's just one part of the extensive music festival scene that we have in Wisconsin. But get started this weekend.
You know, they also have had a golf opportunity, a chance to hit a ball about 100 yards out into a 5-gallon pail. I forget what you win, but it's quite a bit. I did try it last time I was there. I tried it, and I actually landed it on the raft, which I think I was the first one that day to even hit the raft. But it was a lot of fun. But that is a great, great festival. What about the northern part of the state? Festivals up there?
Yes. So let's go to Hodag Country for the Hodag Country Festival. You're going to need to pack your cowboy hat and your belt buckle and your boots because this is a country fest in Oneida County. The festival takes place July 11th through the 14th in Rhinelander, home of the famed Hodag. And it actually attracts equally famous country music acts to entertain you. Thousands will attend the Hodag Country Festival, singing along to country music legends like Neil McCoy and contemporary stars like Bailey Zimmerman and Chris Young. Consider staying the weekend at Holiday Acres. This is a classic Northwoods resort. They have 30 cottages that fit travel parties of all sizes and treat guests to on-site amenities like a paddle boat or bike rentals, basketball, tennis courts, hiking trails, and more. And of course, if you're in Rhinelander, you got to stop by and see the Hodag statue. It's right there outside the Rhinelander Area Chamber of Commerce, and it is the perfect selfie opportunity.
Yeah, it sounds great. And I think, Crawford County has a unique event.
Yes. So the Blues Fest, that's, we're going to the Prairie Dog Blues Fest. They invite folks to enjoy live music on the beautiful St. Farioli Island. That's right in the middle of the Mississippi River. You'll dance along to bands, all kinds of blues music from Chicago blues and Texas boogie to the washboard heavy sound of Zydeco. Prairie Dog Blues Fest, that's happening July 25th through the 27th. They're celebrating their 26th anniversary this year.
And blues and jazz has become very popular, I am told, among the younger set.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, I just read an article.
I don't qualify.
I read an article in the Washington Post about that not too long ago. That it has gained a lot of favor among, people certainly younger than me. I mean, I like blues and I like jazz too, but. I tell you what, it's sounds like a great event in Crawford County. Dave, near Mauston, will give you a chance to join in. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Larry. Hey, I'm on the road on my way north to go canoeing, and I just wanted to put a shout out for the Canoe Heritage Museum in Spooner. it's a terrific place to go and learn about the canoe heritage of Wisconsin, which is
Canoe
is a great place to go and see.
So the Canoe Heritage Center, is it?
It's a Canoe Heritage Museum in Schooner.
You know, I haven't been there. Have you been there, Anne?
I have not either, but I'm just looking it up. It is on our website at travelwisconsin.com, so you can get a little more information. It looks amazing. And of course, Spooner is a really fun area to check out, an easy place to build out an itinerary and do even more things. So love that suggestion. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks a lot, Dave, for calling. Appreciate it. By the way, you can join in too. If you've got a festival you want to mention or a question, give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Josh in La Crosse emailed that they host a veteran music fest every year in La Crosse, Rock the Vets, it's called. All the money goes to Camp American Legion and the Freedom Honor Flight, and it's held the Sunday of Labor Day weekend. That's in La Crosse, the Veteran Music Fest, every year. Rock the Vets, it's called. I like that concept.
Well, that sounds great. I know, and for a good cause, what a great thing. Thank you for mentioning it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for bringing that up, Josh. We talked about golf a little bit, but they're you know, I think, what is it, 547 golf courses in the state? There are a lot of opportunities. And we came out on top in one area of golfing.
We did. I mean, this is the big one. We were ranked the best state in the country for public golf courses, and that was by Golf Digest. So they know what they're talking about. We actually have 10 public golf courses in the top 100 in America, and I believe that's more than any other state, and that's how we were crowned the best.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And I figured out, I think I've played 59, was it? I can't remember exactly now. I counted them up. I think I had 59 courses that I had played. And there are some great courses that might not get as much recognition as perhaps they should.
Yeah, you know, one to check out is Thornberry Creek at Oneida. This is northeast Wisconsin, just outside of Green Bay. It's 27 holes of championship-level golf. It's actually the official golf course of the Packers, so you know it's good. Golfers of all ages and abilities play over sloping hills, past graceful scenery, around an impressive water feature that'll keep you on your toes. Thornberry Creek even welcomed the pros when it hosted the LPGA Classic Tournament in 2019. They have two courses. They have the Legends and the Iroquois, and they're perfect to play on back-to-back days for a weekend trip. And we have some other ideas for you if you do make a weekend out of it, which we recommend. You can check out a fantastic meal and drinks at Cardinal's Crest. The rooftop bar is part of Green Bay's Legacy Hotel. It's a memorable experience. There's a fantastic view. Craft cocktails with a mind of their in-house master mixologist. Sorry, whose work has been featured in outlets like the New York Times, Men's Journal, the Food Network. So those are going to be some good drinks with a great view.
Yeah, it's great. And the Bull at Pinehurst Farms, I think that's another course that probably deserves more recognition than it gets.
I agree. You know, it's the only course in Wisconsin designed by Jack Nicklaus. The Bull helps define the term picturesque. It's 18 holes. It's a picturesque country landscape of farms and creeks, tree-lined fairways, perfectly manicured greens. And while you're there, you can check out Jack's Grill. They offer panoramic views of the 9th and the 10th holes. It's casual fare with like a touch of class. There's pub-style sandwiches, burgers, steaks, seafood, and more. And then the chef's favorite is the grilled shrimp risotto, pan-fried walleye. I could definitely do some eating while I watch golf. That sounds great.
Well, I have played the Bull, and it is really a beautiful, I mean, the setting is absolutely gorgeous. And I think if I remember right, I actually played fairly well, which I don't always do. end.
I'd love to hear it. I bet you did.
Why do you think Wisconsin has such great golf opportunities?
You know, I think in some ways the central sands lend themselves well to what golf courses are looking for with the sandy traps.
Yeah.
But we also just have incredible vistas. I think golf course designers have come to places like Kohler and been reminded of the great courses in Scotland and thought, we can do that here. And, you know, we hear it all the time from golfers who cannot believe that they're in Wisconsin as they hit some of these courses. So it's pretty special what we have in the golf offering, and we're being discovered internationally for it. And that's, you know, good news.
Bring some more money to our state. Tourism dollars for sure. No doubt about it. Ann Sayers, our guest today, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism. Do you have an event that you want to mention? Or a place to stop and see in the state? I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here taking a look at events around Wisconsin, things that are going on in the summer. If you've got a suggestion or maybe you have a question about an event, I hope you'll join in. The number is 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. And I did want to mention our WPR's one-day member drive is on June 27th, and you can help fund our programs right now. We have a little deal going on right now. When 500 donors give before the drive starts, a group of generous members will add an extra $10,000. So you can become one of the first 500, as I'm calling it, first 500 donors. Join in with your gift, any amount. You can do it right now at WPR.org/donate, WPR.org/donate. Well, Becky and Ryo has something for us, Ann. Let's go there. Hi, Becky.
Hi, Larry and Ann. I have a hidden gem or two that I'd like to suggest. The University of Wisconsin has several ag research stations around the state, and I think all of them have display gardens that are just wonderful. I've been at the Spooner display garden a couple times. It's great. I've been to the Garden Door, which is the research station in Door County, and there are several others, so people can look that up online. Generally, they're open from dawn to dusk. You can just walk through and look at all the plants, so they're well identified, and there's usually some literature to pick up. And then the other thing that I think people shouldn't miss in the summer is visiting a county fair. Wherever they're traveling, look ahead online and see if there's a county fair going on in that area. They're just so much fun to see all the kids entering their items, or adults too, and you can always get some fair food, which is a treat, and they just are a great summer thing to do.
Becky, you're a gal after my own heart. And what do you think?
Well, I love both of those suggestions. I always love to view a garden, and I think others will too. And of course, there's no better way to get to know a community than through a county fair. So what a fun way to think about building out a trip and having that sort of at the center. And don't forget too, the Wisconsin State Fair. That's happening August 1st through the 11th, and they have so much planned again for us this year. So worth checking out.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Becky. Appreciate it. Melissa and Cameron, we'll go to you. Hi, Melissa.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. This is Melissa from the Sons of Norway group in Cameron, Wisconsin. We're part of Dover Lodge, and we're going to have a Midsummer Viking Bonfire Fest.
Ooh, that sounds like fun. When's that going to be?
That is going to be Saturday, the 22nd of June, from 5 to 7:30 p.m. It's free, and we're going to have krumkaka demonstrations, lefse, wafflers, and then we'll have people displaying their rose mauling and stuff about Nordic culture, along with a maypole. And then we're going to have a big bonfire at the end. And at Coop the Grass at the end, we're going to have a contest for the king and queen and little prince and princess.
So the Viking Midsummer Fest, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, I guess I need to get out my hat with the horns.
That sounds so fun. Thank you, Melissa. Again, Saturday, June 22nd.
Melissa, thank you. I love it. Brianna and Stevens Point, your turn. Hi, Brianna.
Hi, Larry. I am calling about a series of events. It is called Spokes Fighting Strokes. And these, there are two events. One is July 16th at Wildwood Park in Marshfield. And the other is July 18th at Hostel Shop in Stevens Point. And these are free adaptive cycling clinics. Cycling is a big outdoor activity in Wisconsin, but a big demographic maybe don't feel comfortable on traditional bikes or have had strokes or Parkinson's or MS. And this is an opportunity for people to learn about different ways that they can stay active outside and, you know, enjoy one of Wisconsin's favorite pastimes.
Is there a place people could go for just to find out more, Brianna? Do you know off top?
Yeah, absolutely. I own Hostel Shop. We have the event on our website. You can go to hostelshop.com, and that's spelled HostelShoppe.com, and it's under events. And then on the 19th and 20th, we're actually doing a recreational event to raise money for the Spokes Fighting Strokes organization. So that's, you know, rides of varying distances, food, things like that. So,
Brianna, thank you so much. You know, I think there are many events that promote and help raise money for a number of really worthwhile events, Anne.
Yeah, and this one sounds amazing. I'm really glad that Brianna brought it to my attention and to all of our attention. And yeah, there's just good deeds happening everywhere in addition to opportunities for folks to participate and have some fun and make some lifetime memories. So, you know, there's more than 1,000 events happening between Memorial Day and Labor Day in Wisconsin. And that number, like I said, it grows all the time. So it's really worth just visiting travelwisconsin.com and figuring out what's of interest to you or what area of the state you're hoping to visit. And we'll help you get situated with the right thing for your travel party on the right dates.
Brianna, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Tom in Westby. When I think of Westby, I think of ski jumping. But what's going on right now, Tom?
I think of cheese.
Hi, Larry. I'm right across for the road from the ski jump. I'm lucky enough to live in Timber Cooley, and I'm looking at a golf course, a 9-hole course. It's not a challenging course. You were talking about golf earlier.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful location to come and enjoy the summer in the valley. And if you go a little bit further down the valley, you'll come to Norskedalen, which is a Norwegian museum, a heritage center. Both places fun to visit, food on the site of the golf course, and you can always look up at the ski jump and say, I need to come back the end of January to watch them jump.
Tom, thanks a lot for calling. Anne, you're familiar with that Westby area, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, look at that. Just one stop and you have golfing, you have a heritage center, and of course you've got to stop for some cheese and gifts for friends.
Thank you, Tom. What about Glenn in Stoughton? What's on your mind, Glenn?
Just wanted to chime in about the Catfish River Music Fest that's coming up July 4th through the 6th. It's free. They have all kinds of bands. There's food trucks and a terrific event put on there through the fantastic Stoughton Opera House there in Stoughton.
I love the Stoughton Opera House. I've been to several events there, and it's wonderful. But this festival, now, give me these particulars again, Glenn.
July 4th through the 6th.
Okay, and in Stoughton?
In Stoughton, yes.
Got it. Have you been to the Stoughton Opera House, Ann?
I have. What a gem it is. I would be very interested in to see what they could pull together for this festival. I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. I'm so glad to know about it.
Yeah, thank you, Glenn. I appreciate it very much. By the way, you've recently, you went to the National Travel and Tourism Meetings Week.
Yeah, every year nationally, they designate one year as National Travel and Tourism Week. And this year is May 19th through the 25th. And it's just an opportunity to celebrate all that travel and tourism does for communities, how it strengthens our economy, how it sort of builds bonds between people. And it was so fun again this year. I was so honored to join Governor Evers as we made a bunch of stops around the state. The first one was actually Rooted in Red, and that's a cranberry farm in Dempsey. And you may have also seen that one on Top Chef, because Rochelle from there was, she helped introduce that challenge recently. But that is a five-generation farm. And when I was there, I met three generations of ladies that have helped to make that possible. We learned so much. We got to actually check out the cranberry marsh, see how they're coming along. Things are looking really good. Pretty amazing to see what that's doing in that community.
Well, that sounds really cool. Do you actually go on vacation? Your job, I mean, it sounds, well, she's just vacationing all the time around the state, but I know it's a lot of work. But do you actually go on your own vacation?
You know, this spring I did say, that's it, that we're just going to travel for fun. And it was my husband and our two dogs, and we just chose Stevens Point, and we had so much fun. And it reminded me, as I'm supposed to remind everybody all the time, it's really important to take those days. You know, you have vacation days for a reason, and get out there and just do the things that are fun to you. We did the Green Circle Trail that circles all of Stevens Point. So many different natural landscapes that we encountered along the way. Of course, we had to stop for Belt's Ice Cream. If you don't know them, they're famous for soft serve bigger than your head. It truly, truly is. we stayed at the beautiful Century World Inn, and they were so lovely there and treated our puppies like royalty, which is what they expect. So that was perfect. we just had a really, really nice time. And, you know, even as I am working, like National Travel and Tourism Week, it really is rewarding to get out there. I've been to Door County a ton. I know a lot of us have. I didn't know there was an open door bird sanctuary, 34 acres of birds of prey that have been rescued and rehabilitated, and you can view them and learn their stories at this open door bird sanctuary. I did not know that, and it was incredible.
You know, I'll be in Door County. You know, we're doing the Larry Mueller tour this summer and into fall around the state, and we'll be in Door County on July 18th at the Northern Sky Theater in Fish Creek. It's a beautiful theater. I don't know if you saw it while you were there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's July 18th. And then we'll be in Fall Creek at the Beaver Creek Reserve near Eau Claire.
Love that.
Yeah, Plover, of course. And I mentioned earlier the Food and Farm Expo Center, Exploration Center. Near Stevens Point, and then La Crosse, September 11th at the Black River Beach Community Center, of course, La Crosse. And we're hoping that, well, we'll see a lot of people, and you can register for free tickets for that by going to WPR.org/presents. So I'm on the road. Well,
you
our whole crew is on the road.
Jill
Nadeau, Clara Neipert, for sure. I think Tyler Dinner might be on one of those. So the whole gang. It's always a lot of fun, Ann. Thank you so much for being with us today. And I hope you'll come back and we'll do this again.
Thank you. It was so much fun to join you and hear from all the callers. Thank you. Have a great summer, everyone.
Thank you. Ann Sayers, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism, who loves to make me look foolish with the events questions that she comes up with. Oh, my goodness. You can find those at the Wisconsin Department of Tourism website. Coming up, we're going to take a look at something else. We'll look at Wisconsin firefighters. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. You know, many times we don't think about our fire departments until we actually need them. And on the show today, we're going to get an update from the president of the Wisconsin State Firefighters Association, Chris Klon. I hope you'll join in with your questions as we talk with Chris. What do you want to know about firefighting? Do you live in a community that depends on volunteer firefighters? Maybe you are a firefighter. What's the experience been like for you? Or maybe you were and retired. Love to hear from you as well. The number to call is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Chris Klon, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you, Larry. I appreciate it.
How long have you been a firefighter?
Well, I just passed my 39th year anniversary as a volunteer firefighter here in Wisconsin.
Man. So what motivated you to join?
Well, that's a great question. I had the luxury of growing up one block away from a fire station. So as a little kid, every time the fire whistle went off, everybody in the neighborhood ran up the block, rode up the block on our bikes to see with the firemen coming in, the volunteer firefighters coming into the station and getting in the trucks and leaving for calls. And, you know, there's nothing more exciting for a young child anywhere in this country to hear that fire whistle blow and hear the sirens as the volunteers go out to the calls and make a difference in their communities. So that's kind of how the seed got set. And then once I got a job to a very small community, and my supervisor asked me, well, you know, they're looking for people to join the fire department. Do you think you could help out? And I had the luxury of lots of time as a young single guy in a different town. And I joined the fire department and immediately became part of that community, and it set the hook for me for the rest of my life.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool thing, the volunteer fire departments. I can remember being in a meeting in Cottage Grove. You know, it was probably 50 people in the meeting, and all of a sudden, three or four guys jumped up at the same time and ran out the door. Somebody else said, "What's going on?" He said, "Oh, there must be a fire somewhere," because they all just immediately jumped up right in the middle of whatever was going on and ran out the door.
Yeah, and it's been a tradition in this country, you know, to have volunteer firefighters and provide protection to their communities. It started way back in 1762. Ben Franklin formed the first volunteer fire department in the United States. So 285 years later, you know, here in Wisconsin, 95% of the fire departments in the state are volunteer or mostly volunteer. So most of that fire protection and a lot of the emergency medical services are provided by those fire departments today.
What are the biggest challenges that fire departments are facing around the state right now?
Well, one is recruitment and retention. The problem is that our volunteer force has gone down significantly in the recent decades. The volunteer numbers of volunteer firefighters in the state and nationally are down about 30%. In that same time frame, the population of the United States and Wisconsin has gone up significantly, 30%, and the call volume has doubled. So we have fewer volunteers covering more calls with a lot fewer people. So that increases the demands on our fire service.
Yeah. Josh emailed. He's a trained firefighter and has tried to get into the Campbell Fire Department, but they won't let him in because he doesn't live on French Island. He's within 3 to 4 minutes of response time, but still can't get in. It's frustrating for him. He thinks this is a reason maybe some departments are short on personnel.
And that's certainly true. You know, fire departments generally have a liver and work mileage limits. And if their ranks are sufficient enough that they can support those rules, then it generally stands. But as fire departments continue to get shorter and shorter with volunteers, you know, my fire department recently had to expand those mileage requirements or allowances so we could incorporate more folks that might want to be on the fire department. So I think that's what Pat has caught on.
What are the differences? Look at the differences between the needs of rural and urban departments.
Well, I don't think, you know, here in Wisconsin, it's really a function of how big the tax base is to support a fire department. Our larger cities all have a large tax base and a large number of our large population to serve. So they generally are served by career fire departments, that the firefighters, it's their full-time job, and they that's the way they make a living. In a lot of parts of Wisconsin, it is rural suburban, so that the tax base isn't large enough to support a full-time, fully salaried fire department. So that's why volunteers have filled that niche in Wisconsin. And so, you know, there's over 21,000 volunteer firefighters here in the state. And, you know, again, that's what serves most of those smaller municipalities and rural areas. But it is just a function of whether they can fully support financially those fire departments.
Yeah. How are fire departments working to solve these problems?
Well, you know, recruitment and retention is always going to be a problem, I think. You know, one of the best things I've ever heard is, you know, young people today aren't like I am. And, you know, as a baby boomer, you know, my motivations, my upbringing, you know, allows me to do different things. And the younger people aren't necessarily have those same values, and they may have a little different perspective on their lives. And let's face it, you know, being a volunteer firefighter is a huge commitment of time, huge commitment of effort, to provide those services to their communities. And some people, honestly, I think would rather have a much more scheduled volunteer. I think young people still, and studies show, young people still want to volunteer, but they tend to want it on a schedule. And the volunteer fire service is, you know, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. There's an expectation that you're going to be called to action and use your volunteer time to service your community in those emergency calls.
And the funding on the you talked about funding, and of course the large cities with the tax base and so forth. What about the funding in the rural areas?
Well, recently the Wisconsin State Legislature passed part of their revenue sharing bill last year that basically set the bar for funding. So all fire departments in the state have to be funded at that same level. The 2022 level, and it can't go below that in those communities. So that went a long way in solving some of those baseline funding issues for those smaller fire departments. And that's a good thing. The problem is the inflationary pressure on fire equipment and services have kept going up. So we have a bottom, but we don't have a top. So those pressures for funding will continue. And as those inflationary pressures continue to raise the cost of doing business in the fire service, that's just the way it's going to be. And the other thing is, you know, you should recognize that all volunteer fire departments also generally fundraise. a significant portion of their revenues. You know, whether it's a pancake breakfast or a dance or a fireman's festival, literally studies show that up to 15% of the funds that volunteer fire departments use, they're raising on their own, which is another time drag for those volunteers.
Yeah. Yeah. Thinking about the Cottage Grove Fireman's Festival. Alex in Madison has some questions. Let's go there. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Larry, and your guest. You just made some comments about young people not really getting into the volunteer firefighting. What goes through my mind is how hard it would be to have a job and be in the workforce and support yourself at the same time being on call to attend to those fires and incidences. For your guests, I would love to hear how people balance that out.
Well, thanks for your question, Alex. And that is truly the challenge right there. You know, we talk a lot in society about work-life balance, and volunteering for a fire department adds another layer, another time constraint, another pressure that costs a person. And so I think young people or anybody who volunteers for the fire service, you know, needs to understand that it truly is a major commitment, you know, and it's not just responding to the calls, the emergency calls. It's all the training. It's the other maintenance issues, the fundraising, the meetings, all that is an additional drag on your time. And that takes you away from other things. But I think, you know, obviously with 21,000 volunteers in the state, you know, there is a significant number of people that are willing to commit that time to serve their communities and give back and make a difference. And those are the people, and again, I know there's young people that way that agree with those statements and are willing to make those commitments and make those sacrifices to serve their communities.
On the other hand, there's got to be, there are, all right, it's a sacrifice in one way, but it's got to be, there have to be a lot of pluses for someone who is actually doing this work.
Oh, absolutely. You know, what you give, you get back tenfold. You truly do. You know, you're serving your community, you're making a difference. There's an excitement factor, certainly. For a lot of firefighters, it is exciting to be part of the fire service. It's exciting to meet the physical and mental challenges at an emergency call. The other part that I think that really drew me into it when I first started was the camaraderie of being on a fire department. You know, you instantly make 30 friends that are on your fire department, and those folks are from all walks of life, and you have to accept that and understand that and usually become very fast friends with that that shared objective, that shared effort in providing emergency services for your community.
Yeah. Samantha and Ettrick emailed to ask what the requirements are for volunteer versus professional firefighters.
Well, here in Wisconsin, the standards are the same. From a statewide level, we all have to go through the basic entry-level training. It's 60 hours. It's generally offered by our technical colleges. Every fire department has to offer a minimum of 12 trainings for their members, and most fire departments offer, you know, twice a month training. So it's 24 nights of training plus some Saturdays. You generally have to be 18 years old. You have to have a driver's license, and you have to pass any specific fire department specific standards that they may ask. But understand that it takes some effort. You have to be physically fit. You have to be mentally fit to be able to operate and see some things that not everybody gets to see or should see, in order to be effective and efficient in the volunteer fire service. So the trainings are the same for professionals and volunteers. It's just a function of how much time you're going to be putting in, depending on whether you're making your living doing that or you're doing it as a volunteer in your department.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are talking today with Chris Klon, president of the Wisconsin State Firefighters Association, about volunteer and regular? No, they're all regular firefighters, but rural and urban firefighters, I guess we could say. And you can join in. I hope you will. The number to call, 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at firefighters and firefighting in Wisconsin, talking about how firefighters in the state and volunteer firefighters keep communities safe with our guest, Chris Klon, president of the Wisconsin State Firefighters Association. Let's take a call from Ernie in Madison next. Ernie, hi, thanks for calling.
Hey there. Just by coincidence, I happened to get in my car as this program was going. I am a retired fire chief from Madison Fire Department, and I am currently an instructor at Madison College. And we run a high school fire academy. And we get mostly seniors. We get some juniors. And it's a semester-long program, and it certifies them to Firefighter 1, Firefighter 2, state certification level, and also hazmat. And I thought that it'd be worth knowing for population out there, as they have students or children that are seniors, to explore this idea. And Madison has it, and we sometimes host academies in Mount Horeb and sometimes in Baraboo, depending on if they get enough students that are interested. But primarily it happens here at the campus, so down in the Protective Services Building.
Boy, that sounds great, Ernie. And do you, in your experience, do the some of the students who go through this program wind up as firefighters?
Well, over half of them, lately, we've been doing this program for about 7 years now. Right now, a little over half of them end up with internships with the fire departments, and they live at the fire station. The department will pay for them to go back to Madison College and get an associate degree program in fire science. And some departments will pay for them to get a paramedic a certificate. So they can serve as, either in the volunteer departments or get jobs on full-time fire departments.
Well, it sounds like a great program. And Chris, you're probably familiar with it.
Yes, I am. My fire department just offered a high school class here, and we had 13 students enrolled. And right now we're just waiting for most of them to turn 18 in order to join fire departments here in my county. And also recently, the Department of Safety and Professional Services obtained some grant money that helps support that all across the state at different fire departments and at different vocational technical colleges, to help get young people, specifically high school kids, into that training to see if that's what they would like to do for a living, and then certainly prepare them to be either on a volunteer fire department or to pursue that as a career with a paid fire department. So it's going well. It's grown a lot in the last 5-6 years, and I think it'll continue to grow as we continue to try to recruit folks to be part of the volunteer fires.
Well, I like the idea, too, that as part of the training, as Ernie was talking about here, that they actually qualify firefighter, whatever the number one and number two grades that they have to go through. So they get a start on the training and get a pretty good start from the sound of it, Ernie.
Yeah, it's state certification. They're technically trained to be able to go into a fire with a fire crew.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. That's great. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it very much. Sandy and Marinisco, Michigan. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a question. Three of our smaller communities in northern Vilas County are consolidating services because of the problems with we had with retention and recruitment and the cost of volunteering. So we've consolidated three smaller communities, and we're working on getting equipment in common and sharing resources. I'm just wondering, is there other places in the state that are also doing that, trying to consolidate more smaller rural communities together?
Yeah. What about that, Chris?
Well, yes, that's exactly, one of the ways communities are to overcome that recruitment and retention problem. Consolidations of fire departments, have picked up in frequency recently. Here in my county, we just had three fire departments combine to share resources and share firefighters and skill sets to meet the needs of those communities. And I foresee in the future that will be much more common, that combination or combining fire departments, simply because, there's some efficiencies that can be gained, but also, it saves a lot of money, and especially when you have to share all the resources from fire equipment, fire trucks, to personnel to staff those emergency services. So it's coming. It's one of the ways to solve some of those shortages in firefighters.
Well, I got to believe, a fire truck is not a cheap, you just don't go down to the local dealer and pick one out and deal with about it or anything like that. What do they cost these days?
Well, that's interesting. I mentioned, the inflationary pressures in fire equipment. My fire department bought a truck, an engine, 5 years ago, and it cost $500,000. We just ordered that same engine, the same blueprints, the same capabilities, the same tank size, the same pump size, and it cost $1 million for a fire engine. So the inflation on that truck was, 100% in 5 years. And we're seeing that in all sorts of things. Some of it a result of at least blamed on COVID, but there's certainly a lot of inflationary pressures as fire departments continue to try to upgrade their equipment and keep their firefighters safe. So $1 million is kind of the going rate for a fire engine nowadays.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Mike in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. My question is regarding what we were talking about, training all the new young firefighters, and I was interested in what we are currently teaching them about PFAS, the use of PFAS and alternatives, as well as what we're currently teaching them about how to put out electric car fires and other lithium ion and electric source fires. If you could dabble into that a little bit, that'd be great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Mike. Appreciate it. Chris, what's going on with training in those areas?
Well, PFAS, are a chemical found in Class B foams. Class B foams are used for flammable liquids. Obviously, those PFASs have found their way into drinking water, and the governor has been very active on making sure that stops. And so there was a budget initiative recently, and they picked up all those Class B foams with PFAS from across the state, from any fire department that wanted to get rid of that foam. So as part of a follow-up to that, now there's green certified Class B foams that fire departments are buying to ensure that no more PFAS get back into the environment. The other thing is fire departments also use a Class A foam, which are used on ordinary combustibles. It's a different based foam. And again, those foams are all passing a third-party certification process that they call green. So obviously we give firefighters, new firefighters and old firefighters, those kinds of that kind of information as part of their training, that those chemicals are now being phased out and will be gone very soon, so we don't cause any environmental problems. Now, the electrical car problem is a whole nother can of worms there. There really isn't a consensus in the firefighting world on what exactly we should be doing with electric car battery fires. They're a challenge. You know, they're all lithium based. And if it's and lithium is a metal, a flammable metal. It ends in IUM, so it makes it a flammable metal. And those metals, when they burn, are very intense and very difficult to cool. So there's been cases where fire departments have poured 30,000 gallons of water on an electric vehicle without putting it out. There's some other products on the market, a car blanket, for example, that's supposed to smother those electric vehicle battery fires, but they have found those not necessarily as effective as they thought they would be. So right now there's lots of research going on electric vehicle fires. It's one of the things that fire departments are training on to recognize problems and disable some of those batteries to eliminate some of the potential for those fires. But I understand it's not just electrical vehicles, it's electrical bikes, rechargeable batteries for any hand tools, all those types of things. There's a potential for that lithium ion battery to burn. And I know some horror stories of recharging electric bikes in a hallway in an apartment building and that bike starting on fire and causing apartment fires and risk to people and property. So we're still working on that. I don't think there's a consensus solution to those problems yet. Obviously, the smaller the battery, the more likely we can cool it down and extinguish that fire. But when you get into car-sized batteries, that's when the difficulty and the size of the problem really challenge us as firefighters.
Yeah, I would think so. Back to the fire trucks and so forth, I think a Pierce company in Appleton is the largest manufacturer of firefighting apparatus in the United States, if I'm not mistaken.
They're right up there. They're one of the top two anyway. You know, it's owned by Oshkosh Truck, and they put out 1,000 trucks a year out of the Appleton. They also have a couple other manufacturing facilities farther south in the United States. And a majority of the fire engines and ladders here in Wisconsin are all built by Pierce over in Appleton, and they're beautiful trucks and really do a really nice job on those.
You know, firefighters don't just fight fires. They also help people in other dangerous situations. I was looking at some data, and it looks like firefighters are more often asked about some other situations than actually putting out a fire.
Well, Larry, you're exactly right. You know, here in Wisconsin, fire departments responded to over 300,000 calls last year, and 64% of those were emergency medical calls.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a majority of the work that a fire department does now is emergency medical service. And firefighting, actual firefighting, is only about 4% of the calls that we go to. So it's a vast minority of the calls that we actually respond to. So that just, again, puts a higher level of training and a higher level of call volume on fire departments. You know, we're all first aid, we're all CPR certified, automated external defibrillator certified. Many are also EMTs to help meet that need. And that, again, is another training standard, another time constraint that even small volunteer fire departments have to meet. And I held an EMT license for 25 years because we do still, my little fire department goes to a majority of emergency medical calls. And so then the other calls we get, you know, car accidents, fire alarms, good intention calls, you know, they smell gas or something. So that's really the balance of our jobs as volunteer firefighters is EMS, alarms, toxic situations, rescues, and then fires.
Man, so that you have to get that training. You have to be certified. Yeah. And I imagine the equipment that I would imagine there's equipment for starting hearts up again and things of that nature.
Absolutely. AEDs, you know, jump kits for all sorts of medical problems. And again, you know, small volunteer fire departments are the toolbox of the community. You know, we basically take care of everything the police can't. We basically respond and if a problem's identified, we solve the problem with all the equipment we carry, and we have to carry lots and lots of equipment to meet all the needs that we might run into or calls for services. So it's a challenge.
Chris Klon is president of the Wisconsin State Firefighters Association. Questions for him, or maybe an experience to share? Were you involved in as a firefighter, or maybe you're involved right now, or maybe you've been involved in instruction relating to it? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at firefighters and firefighting in Wisconsin with our guest today, Chris Klon, president of the Wisconsin State Firefighters Association. Questions, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. You can email to ideas@WPR.org. And just a note, Wisconsin Public Radio programs, we have a special role in our community, just like the firefighters do. They're unique because our programs are unique, I think, because we are listener-supported. Just like the firefighters are listener-supported, are supported by their communities. Give now and you'll help us meet a special challenge, one that will make your gift go even further. When 500 people donate before the 27th of June, that's our one-day drive, a group of generous members will add an extra $10,000 for the WPR programs that you enjoy and value. So give now at WPR.org/donate. You can be one of the first 500 people to donate. Love to have you do that. That's WPR.org/donate. Well, we have some callers online. John in Black River Falls, we'll give you a chance to join in. Thanks for calling.
Yes, Larry, I was a firefighter for the Department of Natural Resources, and it's important to note that the rural fire departments are very important in helping to fight rural fires. We worked with them a lot. We trained with them a lot, and they're an important part of that type of firefighting.
John, thanks. Wildfires, that's another area, Chris, that you get involved in.
Certainly. And John makes a great point. You know, here in Wisconsin, I'm a retired TNR forest ranger. So that was part of my how I made my living. But, you know, John makes a good point. Here in Wisconsin, it's almost unique in that in wildland fires, it's a partnership between the DNR and those local rural fire departments. And that partnership includes, you know, training. DNR also runs a grant program to help purchase wildland firefighting equipment for those local fire departments. And obviously we go to the same calls, work together, and that's one of the reasons the wildland fire problem is literally minimized here in Wisconsin, because we bring all the resources that we can to keep those fires small and under control in a very efficient manner, because we use our partners there at the DNR to help us with that job.
Yeah. John, yeah. Appreciate that call, John. Thank you so much. Larry in Monona, your turn. Hi, Larry.
Hello, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I was a volunteer firefighter with the city of Monona for 30 years before I retired. And I came to the fire service by accident. I called on an ad for an ambulance driver. And I had been a medic in the Air Force, and I got to the interview, and they said, we need someone to drive a fire truck. And my heart sunk. And then the other chief said, can you drive stick shift? And I said, yes. And they called me back the next day, and I was hired. I had about 2 days of training, and then I was on shift. And in the 30 years that I was in the fire service, I was amazed at the advances in training and equipment that just have made the whole service much more professional, whether you're a volunteer or a paid department. And even the mutual aid box alarm system that was designed for multiple departments to respond to large events. All of these things went to making better safety for the public.
Larry, I appreciate the call very much, and I'm sure, Chris, you want to comment.
I do. You know, that's a typical story. You know, we need some help. Can you do something? Some skill you have, we can marry you up with a skill we need on the volunteer fire service. But Larry mentioned the mutual aid box alarm system. What that is a pre-planned mutual aid system between different fire departments or multiple fire departments. And it has made things much more efficient. It allows us to share resources, fire trucks, and certain specialized equipment, but also personnel. So a lot of small volunteer fire departments have problems staffing daytime fires because their members are working at their real jobs. So this mutual aid box alarm system has allowed us to streamline asking for help with neighboring fire departments and different specialized equipment, so we can get that faster and bring enough people to actually solve the fire problem or whatever problem we're trying to solve by sharing those resources. And that's really been really effective and efficient to help with those shortages of volunteer fire departments by sharing everything, equipment and people.
Yeah. And Larry, thanks a lot for your work over the years and appreciate your call very much. Karen in Madison, your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Larry. And the, I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Oh, Chris.
Chris, I just have a short story about the firefighters. I love animals. And there was someone had found a small possum, and I went out of my house, and it was sitting up against a tree dead. It was like a setup, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Someone had set it up. And so I called. It scared me, you know. And I called, and the police came by and picked it up and took it to have it tested to see if someone had poisoned it. And about an hour later, Paco, a firefighter, and another woman, out of nowhere, they showed up at my house just to see if I was okay and stayed about an hour just to talk to me and make sure that I was, you know, okay because of the incident. And that's something firefighters, I didn't know they did.
Well, Karen, thank you so much. It sounds like a health check, Chris.
Yeah. You know, that's part of the job. And certainly, you know, all firefighters are very, very compassionate people. That's why we do the things we do. And our goal is to serve the community. And sometimes it means, you know, checking in on people and doing kind of the extra things. And it sounds like Karen got a little extra service to make sure that she was okay. And that's part of the job as a volunteer firefighter.
Yeah. Karen, thank you very much for giving us that story. Appreciate it. Helen in West Salem, your turn. Hi, Helen.
Hi. Many years ago, our son was in kindergarten, and the kindergarten class went to La Crosse and took a tour around in their fire department. My son happened to be homesick, so he couldn't go. So later, he had his own personal tour. So my question is, do they still do this? Do classes go through the fire departments in different places?
Yeah, interesting. Helen, thanks for calling. Does that occur, Chris?
Oh, yes. Yes. You know, there's obviously Fire Prevention Week in October, so a lot of fire departments have school programs, whether we go to the schools or we have the school come down to the fire station and and give a little tour and then plus some education there. That's pretty much standard operating procedure for every fire department in that that week in October. But we also have open houses around the year to try to recruit folks, but obviously young kids and young adults are future of the fire service, and planting that seed is very important, and that's certainly part of our efforts to continue with that recruitment and the retention on the volunteer fire side.
Yeah, Helen, thank you for calling. Kevin in Monona, your turn. Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
So my question is, why I noticed this year one community didn't have a fire ban going on, but other communities all around did. And why isn't this a state, a swept area, you know, a whole thing where one area has a fire ban and one area right next to it doesn't have a fire ban? So I don't understand that.
Okay. Fire bans. You guys have a ban, Chris?
Well, I assume he's talking about wildland fire bans. And there are about 50% of the state is covered by the Department of Natural Resources, and they obviously have expertise in wildland fires, and they set those regulations, according to the fire danger. It's up to all the local municipalities to set their restrictions on open burning outside, and the hope is that they follow the Department of Natural Resources recommendations for that. But if it isn't covered by Department of Natural Resources doesn't have jurisdiction, then it's up to the local municipalities to do that. And again, some are very, very good about that, and some perhaps aren't necessarily as understanding of the risk associated with that open burning. So yeah, it's up to the local municipalities. And as far as Kevin's point, it's absolutely true. There are differences in all those municipalities. And sometimes neighbors have conflicting information and conflicting restrictions. So it's kind of a challenge.
Yeah. Kevin, thank you. Andy in Door County, your turn. Hi, Andy.
Hi, good afternoon. So Chris and Larry, the question I have is as far as like recruitment and retention. So I'm 39. I've been on a volunteer paid on call department for 22 years. It started when I was really young. It just seems that when you recruit somebody from like high school or in the college years, we only at this generation now, we only get about 5 years out of that individual. And then all of a sudden now they're gone and we're back to, you know, just the same, you know, out of the 50 people in our department, we're back to the same 15 or 20 that seem to respond. And I'm just wondering what the Wisconsin State Firefighters Association is doing for that recruitment and retention problem. And I know it seems to be the same statewide. And if you have any tips on how we can just retain people and get more people than the regular people that show up on our calls.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, thank you, Andy. That is, if I had the answer to this, I would be very, very famous. As I mentioned earlier in the show, we have to understand that, I'm an older person in the fire service. The reasons I joined may not equate to why my children might join. But some things that I've learned in recruitment and retention, certainly recruitment, is with these younger generations, we really have to, find some motivation to meet their needs, And for example, recruiting on social media and outreach is essential to get that younger generation. We also have to give those younger folks expectations of what we expect. I think, they deserve to know up front what they're getting into. And so they understand those challenges initially. But in general, as you age, as you get older, you're much less likely to volunteer. So we have to go after those younger folks, but we also have to understand that that those time commitments, those family commitments come up as they mature. You know, the child rearing ages, those family commitments can be a challenge to continue with full commitment to the volunteer fire service. We also have to adjust schedules and again, make things more accommodating to those younger folks, understanding that they may have other obligations with their time. And that's something that fire departments traditionally haven't been very flexible with. And the other thing I think that really helps with recruitment is those younger folks have a very short attention span. And we have to make sure that the training we're giving them is very relevant and organized, and things are kept very on schedule. I think that helps them understand that you know, that's the way we should operate, that we value their time and we value their efforts, but we have to keep things organized for them to keep them engaged in the volunteer fire service.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's good points. Paul in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Paul.
My question if you had a house fire, I understand that the fire department is in control of the facility at the time of the fire, but also that afterwards, sometimes people are prevented from getting their possessions.
For a time period anyway. Comment on that, Chris?
Yes. So, you know, you are correct, Paul, that when there's a fire, the fire department, quote, takes ownership of that structure to extinguish that fire. And that authority is all in state statute that allows that to happen. But there is also an obligation on the fire department's sense is that they have to do an investigation to see what caused that fire. And so sometimes that means that the owners of the structure may be prohibited for a period of time of getting things out of the house so they can do an accurate and effective investigation on the cause of the fire. And that, again, that responsibility is outlined in state statute to those fire departments. But certainly, you know, once that investigation is concluded, once those questions have been answered, that certainly the fire department will allow those owners to go back into their structures and probably help them salvage what they can for those owners and help them secure that structure from outside elements or any other kind of issues.
Yeah. Paul, thank you. What can we do to support firefighters in our community, Chris?
Well, there's an interesting statistic I read that 50% of the residents in Wisconsin don't even know that their fire department is a volunteer fire department. you know, I think, you know, with 95% of the state's fire departments all volunteer or mostly volunteer, people have to understand that these people are all these volunteers are going out of their way to help those folks. And then I would ask them to obviously support those local fire departments through the fundraising efforts that the local fire department is making, but also to express their support to the local governments and the municipalities that are hiring these fire departments to do that job and that community service and give us that support. I mean, that's all that we really ask for, whether it's financial support or moral support or to help keep that volunteer service active and involved in their community to provide those services.
Well, you guys are doing a wonderful job. Men and women are doing a wonderful job, Chris. Thank you so much for being with us today, and I hope we have a chance to do this again. Chris Klon, president of the Wisconsin State Firefighters Association. Good to have him with us today. And thank you for joining us. You know, so all our shows are a team effort, and we've got producers Clara Kniper, Joel Patenhod. Our technical director, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins on duty today. Our executive director is Jill Nadeau, of course. And I'm your host, Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll look forward to another visit tomorrow here on Wisconsin Public Radio News. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store.